We like to think Seakeeper has become minimum expectation on both. 10 models all the way from the Seakeeper 1 all the way up to the Seakeeper 40. And we're stabilizing boats over 150 feet.
150 feet?
That's right.
Wow.
My family had a small 20-foot Grady White when we were growing up, and it was an offshore fishing boat in that day. So we took it down to the Gulf and grouper fished.
Tell me the story again, dude. I mean, I'm sure everybody at home wants to hear it.
And yeah.
Guys, this is a nutty story.
And these big boats, like 18-reeler, big Weaver, 90-something foot, like they were complaining about how rough it is, and we're out there in a 35-footer.
You've landed on CCO's The Science of Fishing, where passion meets precision. Hold on tight as we dive in. But before we do, we would like to thank Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. for sponsoring this episode.
Will, thanks so much for taking the time here today, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Absolutely, man. So, Seakeeper, dude, this is the Seakeeper 4, right?
That's right. Yeah, this is our newest model right here.
Okay, tell me a little bit about, you know, Seakeeper, how you guys started, what the history of the company is, and where you came from and where you are today. You guys are worldwide, right?
Yeah, we are. We like to think Seakeeper has become minimum expectation on boats. So in our core market, we're now installed on 50% of new boats built every year, 35, 75 feet. So if you're buying a boat today, Seakeeper is something that you got to have on board.
Yeah.
We originally started back in 2008. That's when we commercialized the first Seakeeper. And fast forward to today, we have over 20,000 customers on the water today. 10 models all the way from the Seakeeper 1, which starts at 23 feet, all the way up to the Seakeeper 40, and in multiple configurations, we're stabilizing boats over 150 feet.
150 feet.
That's right.
Wow. Well, what kind of boat can you fit it in, like on the small side of things?
Yeah, so anything from, like, I have a 26 Sportsman.
Yep.
They offer the Seakeeper 1 as a factory option on that boat. A lot of builders, we work with basically every major boat manufacturer.
Yeah.
So if you're buying a boat today, there's a great chance that Seakeeper is offered as either an optional piece of equipment or as a standard piece of equipment. So Scout is a good example. You buy a Scout 42, it comes with a Seakeeper as a standard piece of equipment on board that boat.
I see. So, but you don't have to buy a new boat to get it, right?
That's right. Yeah, you don't have to buy a new boat. We have 300 trained dealers around the world. So you don't have to be just in Florida. You can be in North Carolina. You can be in the Middle East. You can be in the Mediterranean. And we have a partner in that market that can retrofit a Seakeeper on board your boat.
That's awesome. So pretty much anybody can get a Seakeeper and they can have a great time with it, right?
That's right.
That's awesome, man. So let's talk a little bit about why Seakeeper is so great. Some people see these things as, who needs a gyro on a boat? I want to get out there and I want to fish and I don't need that. It scares the fish away, right?
Yep.
It doesn't scare the fish away, right? From boats that I've been on and I've fished on with a Seakeeper, I fish the same. I do even better sometimes. You know, we talk about being on those big sport fishes with these things on there, and something about it is the omnidirectional sonar, right? Can we talk a little bit about that and like how that helps?
Yeah, so very specific use case there. Our mission is to transform the boating experience for our customers. And in order to do that, right, it means a little bit something different for all the different segments of customer bases that we serve. So sport fish is actually a relatively small portion of the market, but it's super, super important to us. It's where our hyper users are, right? They're higher hour, they put the product through its paces, and it pushes us to be the best that we possibly can be. So for a sport fish customer, right, comfort is really important. You're out there for a long day, you're fishing multiple days back to back in a tournament, and you want to be at your top, right? You don't want to come back to the dock drained. You're on vacation at the end of the day. You want to come back, be able to have a good time, and still have enough gas in the tank to get out and do it all over again the next day.
Yeah.
So for those customers, Seakeeper makes boating more comfortable. It also allows you to fish on days that you otherwise might have to stay at the dock.
Really?
Right, some people love the fish, but they might get seasick. And so that might keep them at the dock more often than they'd like to be. Seakeeper, you know, keeps those people from getting seasick as well.
I gotcha.
And then you talked about the omnidirectional sonars. That's you know, new technology that's came into the sport fishing game more recently. And we're seeing more and more customers, when they do retrofit their boat with an omni sonar, also doing the same with a Seakeeper, because it increases the effectiveness in the range of those systems as well.
Wow, so it helps those guys that are fishing tournaments be more locked in, catch more fish, actually.
That's right, find more fish and be able to go after them and try to get that bite.
See, it helps catching fish, it doesn't deter.
Yeah, yeah, I wish we would have come up with that value proposition to customers, but it's something we've kind of learned after the fact. And we've done some more commercial military application installations.
Really?
that try to basically accomplish the same thing with bottom scanning vessels.
Okay, and you guys are at all the major billfish tournaments, right? You guys have a tech there
ready to roll.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so over the years, our focus at these tournaments was primarily sales and marketing focused, right? We were trying to build awareness of our product because not many people had them. I think you know, if you roll back the clock to 2008, people were laughing at us. They're like, what's a Seakeeper?
Yeah.
And why the heck do we want to put that big thing on our boat? And right, the more and more people became aware of the product, we've shifted our focus into how do we make the customer experience as best as we possibly can.
Right.
So we cover about a dozen tournaments, all the way from Los Sueños Triple Crown, all the way to White Marlin Open in Ocean City, New Jersey, and Cape May. And we'll have several technicians on site, and we're there to support customers. So all the service is free of charge to our customers, in warranty or out of warranty. And we want to be able to turn people around and get them back on the water the next day. You know, if you look back, you don't have to have a Seakeeper to go fishing, right? And most of these people spent their entire lives fishing without a Seakeeper. But today, people have to have a Seakeeper on board to go out and enjoy themselves and have a good time. And we're a really important part of our customers' fishing programs. And they put a lot of money and trust into us. We want to make sure we're giving it back to them.
Right. That's awesome, man. So we're talking about these big sport fishes and these big tournaments, but there's also the little guy out there, you know, with the 30-foot boat, with the 26-foot boat, right? You know, how does a Seakeeper improve their quality of boating, their quality of fishing on a regular day while you have the wife out, you know, or, you know, on a rough day where you got to run for those guys up north 40, 60 miles out to go catch the tuna, or even down here in South Florida going to the Bahamas? So what kind of improvement in quality of ride can we see from that?
Yeah, so I joined the company in 2018, and shortly after I joined, we launched the Seakeeper 2, which brought us below 35 feet for the first time.
Okay.
A couple years later, we launched the Seakeeper 1, which is our baby Seakeeper. And our goal has always been to bring stabilization down into entry-level boating. We think we can help grow the industry, right? We have a 40% churn rate of new boaters. They come into the sport, and boating is not comfortable. It's too much of a pain in the butt to maintain your boat, and we lose those customers. So our goal is to give people the absolute best experience possible in boating, and the first time they're out on board the boat, and that's where people come into the sport, right? Is they're not buying a sport fish yacht for their first boat. They're buying a 20-something foot center console.
Yeah.
And they're not just using it for fishing, they're also using it for family fun, as you said. And you know, my boat, I have a 26 Sportsman, and that boat's a small boat with a big boat attitude. We run it 65 miles offshore, and with our two technologies, Seakeeper 1 gyroscope, and with the Seakeeper Ride on the transom, I'm comfortable not only while I'm running there, but I'm comfortable when I stop and I'm either drifting or trolling as well.
Okay, wow. So it keeps you stable even while you're stationary.
That's right.
And not just on the ride out.
Yeah, so we encourage our customers to run their Seakeeper at all times.
Oh, wow.
It is most effective at rest and at slow speed, so kind of up to 10, 15 miles an hour. And then above that, that's where we have our new product, Seakeeper Ride, which is the only attitude control system for boats. And it reduces 50 to 60% of the roll and pitch underway. So very unique and different from the gyroscope, and they kind of complement each other perfectly.
You can have both on the boat.
And you can have both on the boat.
Okay,
that's
right. So you're just going to have a freaking rock out there, just like nothing's rocking the boat.
Yeah, we're trying to help you cheat a little bit, right? We're trying to make it comfortable and as user-friendly and easy as it can be.
I gotcha. So you guys just rolled out a few new different Seakeepers, right? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so innovation is such a big part of who we are. And we're not trying to look at what's everybody else doing and how do we make ours just a little bit better than ours, right? This is a space that we created.
Yeah.
We look in the mirror and we see our competition. We've got to continue to be able to beat ourselves so that we can continue to own the industry that we created 15 years ago. So we've launched an effort to really revamp our entire product line. And we're taking a lot of the learnings that we had, we brought on from the Seakeeper 1, and we're working it back into the product line. So Seakeeper 4 right here, and there's a sister unit to this, the Seakeeper 4.5. This is the DC version. The 4.5 is AC, so made for boats with a generator. This made for boats that don't have a generator, which is really popular for boats, you know, sport fish style center consoles. It's sort of, you can't have a generator on board those boats. And you know, the basic premise of it is we're packing 30% more stabilization into a package that's 7% smaller than our existing Seakeeper 3.
Oh my goodness.
And with a 4.5, 50% more stabilization than the Seakeeper 3.
So you're packing more of a punch at a smaller guy.
Yeah, basically. Exactly. Wow. And you look at outboard engines today, and horsepower to weight is super, super critical. And that's why you see, you know, certain brand of outboard engines really dominating the industry right now. And, and we're kind of following that same path where we're trying to make the product as power efficient as possible.
Okay, I gotcha. So let's talk about when someone wants to get one of these Seakeepers and they have it on their boat, what is the customer experience like? You know, is it, you're just gonna throw one on and that's it? But I feel like you guys are always involved with your customers. You guys are taking care of them. Like you said, at those big tournaments, you guys are providing technician services free of charge. So tell me a little bit about the customer experience, how you guys are able to retain your customer base and, you know, just expand the way you have. You guys have done an incredible job. You guys are killing it here at the show. I mean, it's incredible. You guys have like six different booths.
Yeah.
It's incredible to see, man. So
yeah, it's a Seakeeper's a really fun place to be. You know, not only are our internal teammates really excited about what we do, what our mission is, our customers are excited about the product, right? Because we change the way they experience their boat, and their boat and their free time they spend on the water is really, really important for us. When I look at our customer base, it's kind of twofold. Right, we have the end user that's actually using our product out in the field every day, and they're incredibly important to us, right? If we're not providing that performance for them, if we're not providing the quality experience for those customers, they don't want a Seakeeper on board. And most people that have a Seakeeper, that's not the only Seakeeper they're going to own in their boating careers. They're going to own 2, 3, and it's not just going to start with a Seakeeper 1. They're going to end up in a Seakeeper 3 or Seakeeper 6 one day.
Wow.
And we keep that in mind. And that drives a lot of how we think about and we invest in the customer experience. But it starts before that. You got to have outstanding B2B partners so that you can curate that experience for your end user.
Right.
And so we really partner with our boat builder partners, and we work with 250, 300 boat builders around the world to install product on new boats at the factory. And we have factory technical reps, we have application engineering resources to make sure that they're installing the product in the right way, they've got the right structure, they've got the electrical and plumbing setups to make sure the Seakeeper is working, you know, properly when the customer takes delivery of the boat. And then we've also invested a lot in our dealer networks. We've got 300 factory trained dealers spread out around the world, and they don't only refit boats, but they also perform the end user service as well.
Okay.
We've got two training facilities, one in Tampa, Florida, and then one in Lavagna, Italy, where we have another,
in Italy.
And you actually have to pass a hands-on technical training course in order to become a certified Seakeeper technician.
How many people do you guys certify a year, roughly?
Yeah, it's up close to 500 technicians last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, you guys are cranking them out.
Yeah.
Units and guys to take care of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And you have to invest that way to make sure that you're providing not only the performance, but complementing that with the customer support that people expect of a product like this.
In front of me, I have the Flushmaster by Seamule. This little device simplifies the process for flushing your engines. All it takes is 3 easy steps. Plug the hose into the device, plug the hoses from the device into your motors, and press on. That's all it takes to preserve the longevity of your motors, ensuring 100% clean water is running through them. So if you want to preserve your motors, go to Seamule.com and go pick up a Flushmaster.
Let's talk a little bit about you, dude.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, you're a fellow Tar Heel, right?
That's right.
Let's go Heels, baby.
Yeah.
So
Tar Heel born and bred.
Yes, sir. There you go. You're from Greensboro. We were talking about it a little earlier. And you're a diehard fisherman at heart, I'd like to say, right? Tell me a little bit about that. You were talking about how in the summers, when you were younger, you used to work on a charter boat, right? Off of the coast of North Carolina, right?
Yeah. I grew up around boating and have always been passionate about boating.
Yeah.
I love the fish. It can be a brook trout or blue marlin. I kind of get the same sort of rush out of it.
Yep.
But like you said, my family had a small 20-foot Grady White when we were growing up, and it was an offshore fishing boat in that days. We took it down to the Gulf and grouper fished. We did a little bit of dolphin fishing off the North Carolina coast some as well. And as I got older, I started working on one of our friends' private boats. It was a 51 Spencer out of Hatteras, North Carolina. And got some really, you know, formative experiences being on the water, but really got me passionate about not only fishing, but also boat building as well.
Right. What was one of the most memorable, you know, moments you had while you were charter fishing out there? I mean, I'm sure you've seen some crazy stuff.
Yeah. You see a lot of crazy stuff. You meet a lot of really cool people.
Yeah.
And it's one of the the fun things about that kind of intimate environment you get when you're on the boat is, you know, you get to know people really well, you know, you're shooting the shit, hearing about their story, what their profession is, teaches you about how to be a salesperson, also how to take care of people, make sure they're comfortable. Just a really, really cool experience in that regard. But, you know, you don't forget your first Blue Marlin's kind of hard to forget.
Yeah. And how big was it?
It was about 350 pounds.
Whoa, dude. Yeah. That's a big
on a tuna rig. And we primarily meat fished, so dolphin, tuna, wahoo. Yep. And when the billfish bite would get hot, we'd push offshore, which in North Carolina is only going from like 21 to 23 miles to 25 to 27.
Yeah.
So it's just getting out closer to the edge. And she came in on the right long rigger, and we had our tuna spread out.
Okay.
You know, hit one of our sea witches, and 45 minutes later released first blue marlin.
Wow, dude, that's freaking awesome, dude. I have yet to catch a blue marlin. I'm waiting for my first, but dude, that's killer. So you guys released her, right? You just said, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotcha. So what's the biggest tuna you've caught out there? Tuna's my favorite thing to catch, right?
Yeah.
And you guys get a shitload of yellowfin. You guys get those bluefin out there. Have you ever fished in like Moorhead when they come in real close and all that?
Yeah, I haven't fished out of Moorhead. Actually, I have a couple times. My uncle owned a charter boat out of Moorhead City for a few years.
Okay.
And we did some bluefin in there. We didn't catch one on the couple trips I went on, but in Hatteras, we tied into a giant. It was, you know, 315 pounds. Yeah. So not a super, super big giant, but a big one. And I mean, just such raw power on those fish.
Those things are incredible, man.
They are. They are.
I've caught two quote-unquote giants out of New Jersey when I was up there out of Point Pleasant. 320 and 280 doubleheader at the same time.
Oh, my God.
We had six guys, and we were rotating through, man. It was just – those things have some – dude, I couldn't last more than 10 minutes. The power on them, like you're saying, is just –
it's raw animal.
Yeah, dude. We have to keep swapping guys out, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's teamwork. That's a little more fun than strapping one person in the chair and letting them have at it.
Exactly. So have you had any crazy experiences with clients that you remember from – those days when you were charter fishing?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
let's hear it, man.
Yeah, some interesting experiences.
I'm sure everybody at home's curious.
Yeah. I mean, all kinds of things happens. You know, people do silly stuff. We didn't have a sea keeper on board that boat. So I remember one guy, he was just horribly seasick, and he just kept throwing up all over the boat. And I couldn't get him to understand the concept that, hey, man, it's okay if you're sick, and also do it outside. Don't do it inside the
salon. He was throwing up inside?
He was throwing up outside.
Okay,
but it was just
God.
Like all over the deck on the reels. And I'm like, dude, if you're going to try to put your head overboard, like get it all the way overboard.
Yeah.
But, you know, just silly stuff. People drinking too much and having a good time. And, you know, it happens. You're out there. You're out there,
man.
Enjoying yourself.
Some people don't know what's going on. You get some newbies out there and you're way off, and it's kind of hard to justify coming back. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when you're doing it a lot like that, and even now, it's you gain a little bit better appreciation for it when you're running your own boat and all the effort that goes into making sure people return home safely.
Of course.
And if things get hairy, you're going to know when you need to pack it up and turn it around. Fortunately, on a bigger boat, right, it's a little more leeway. You're a little more seaworthy than you are in a small center console.
Yeah.
But you're committed, right? You're spending all the fuel to get out there. You're not turning around and coming back in.
Yeah.
And some people don't understand that, right? They think, all right, well, if I get out here and I'm not having a good time, we can just turn around and come back in.
Well, but it's not that easy, man.
It's sometimes when you stick it out, that's when the magic happens.
Exactly,
and you get that
dude.
Bite that you've been waiting on.
Dude, I always believe when it's rougher out there, the bite's always better, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of times it is.
Yeah, man. So let's talk about a touchy subject that I heard about from you guys yesterday at the White Marlin Open.
Oh, yeah.
That big Allison you caught, man.
Yeah.
Tell me the story again, dude. I mean, I'm sure everybody at home wants to hear it. And guys, this is a nutty story.
So we used to fish a lot more tournaments than we do today.
Yeah.
We had bigger demo boats then because our product was bigger.
Yeah.
So we had a couple 35-foot demo boats at the time, and this would have been 3 years ago. No, pre-pandemic. So 4 years ago, 2019, I think, White Marlin opened. And we were just kind of cobbling together some funds. You know, Seakeeper would pay our hotel and our fuel and our bait and ice. But if we were doing Calcuttas,
nice.
It's on the individuals to put it together. And so, right, we're not professionals. We're in a relatively small boat compared to the fleet.
What were you in?
We were in a 35 Blue Water.
Okay. Beautiful boat.
Yeah, so Florida built, center console, awesome boat, really seaworthy. And I think we had like $7,000 that we had put together. We were going to stack it in the right Calcuttas.
Yeah.
And fishing with a bunch of Jersey guys that wanted a tuna fish.
Yeah.
And I think the last year we had tuna fish, and the tuna fishing was terrible. And so you're basically riding around 3 years looking for a ghost. And yeah. It's, you know, only so fun. So this year, the marlin bite was really going off. No tuna around, no big eye had been caught for like the last 2 weeks. And so I kind of convinced everybody, or maybe I went rogue and said, let's put all of our money in the billfish categories and the small boat categories instead of going all in on tuna.
Okay.
So we fished the first couple days, primarily targeting white marlin. And, you know, we were reminded the fact that we weren't professionals. And we caught a couple fish, but right, white marlin in that setting, it's luck of the draw if you're going to catch a big one.
Yeah.
And if you're only catching a couple and not catching a couple dozen, it's hard to find that big one.
Right.
So we were feeling a little bit defeated, and we said, you know what, our best chance of catching a big marlin and winning the most money is to go after a big blue marlin. And there had also been a couple of Allison tunas caught, which is a big yellowfin, basically over 100 pounds when their sickle fins get real big.
Yeah.
Way out in the deep. So we rolled the dice third day and we said, we're going to go way out in the deep, off the Wilmington.
How far out were you?
We were like 90 miles offshore.
Oh, wow. So you guys were a ways in a 35-foot boat.
Yeah.
Little center console, man. Yeah. Oh, shit.
So, and I actually got to circle back to one piece of this. Second day was horrific. I mean, it was so rough. It was raining. And this is in August, so you're expecting it to be pretty warm. It's like 70 degrees, and you're in shorts and a t-shirt. Maybe you've got your slickers. We were cold. And these big boats, like 18-reeler, big weaver, 90-something foot, they were complaining about how rough it is, and we're out there in a 35-footer. And so we had two of our directors of engineering on board the boat on the second day, and they decided after that experience, they're like, guys, four-hour run in, like, we're not fishing the third day. So we were down to a small crew on the third day. We decided to go to the deep, put our lines out, and we had, like, primarily blue marlin spray, like, plugs in the water.
Yeah.
And 15 minutes after we put the lines in, right shore just get hammered. And we're like, this is a big fish.
Yeah.
It was on an 80, and it burned off a lot of line. And so I'd caught a couple of white marlin earlier in the week, like I think the only two fish we'd caught.
Okay.
And so I was like, all right, I'm standing here next to this reel. One, that's a big fish. I don't know if I want to tie into this.
Yeah.
And I'll give somebody else a turn. So our CEO, Andrew Sempervivo, better shape than I am. Fortunately, he grabs the rod, did an awesome job on the rod and got this thing next to the boat.
How long did it take to get in?
Only about 30, 45 minutes.
Okay.
And I mean, you look down and it's just this monster yellowfin. And when you've got one, you know, starting to show color underneath the boat and those sickles are shining, I mean, it starts to get
I just got the chills here.
It gets your heart pumping.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, then you start to get a little nervous. All right, it's the end game. We got to make it happen here.
Back off and, the drag a little.
Keep the drag on. You don't want to think it's go time and time to make another run. Although it did. I mean, it stripped off a ton of line on a second run right after we got color the first time. Got the fish back to the boat, stuck a couple gaffs right when we got our first shot. And, I mean, it's just the excitement when you catch a fish like that you know is what could be a once-in-a-lifetime fish and something that we also could win a little bit of money in.
Right.
Really cool. So we get the fish in the boat, and we're taking pictures, land next to it, because this thing's just like a behemoth.
Yeah.
And we fished the rest of the day. We saw a couple billfish out in the deep. And, you know, it's I don't think that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience pulling into, I guess, Harbortown Marina, where they do the weigh station. We kept the boat at sunset. But pulling in there and just feeling the excitement in an event like the White Marlin Open is kind of second to none.
Yeah.
And, you know, we pulled that big fish up, weighed it, and we ended up winning $100,000. But sort of the irony of it all is, had I not convinced everybody to stack our money in the billfish category, probably won like $400,000.
That's a big payday, dude. Yeah, damn. Yeah.
So
at least you
different.
Won some money.
Yeah, and I think like Brooke, one of our regional OEM managers, was on the boat with me as well. And he's like, look, dude, we got to hang out at the White Marlin Open this week. We got to fish together. We're walking away with a little bit of money. And we just beat Michael Jordan.
Dude, yeah, you beat the Catch 23, man.
We just beat Michael Jordan. And a lot of these, you know, badass bill fishing crews that travel the world. So it was a cool experience for sure.
Dude, that's awesome. Were you guys up on the podium and all that?
Yeah, we went to the awards ceremony to get our big golf check.
I hear second to none over there. I haven't been yet, but
yeah, it's the Super Bowl of billfish tournaments. That's for sure.
That's incredible, dude. Wow. So any other memorable fish over the years that you've caught, you know, other than that big Allison?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them.
What's the most memorable?
I just went on a trip down at Casa Vieja a year ago in February with my dad and my brothers.
Okay.
And, I mean, you get a lot of shots. I think we had 60 bites on sailfish. I won't disclose how few we actually caught. I think we were hooking our own fish and my brothers and myself were not pros and they hadn't really done the bait and switch before, but I think we caught 30. Okay. And last day tied into a blue marlin. My dad got to catch his first blue marlin. It was really cool.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Dude, I got one last question for you.
Yeah.
What was your favorite place in Chapel Hill?
So I was a topo guy.
You're a topo guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like
something
that,
about
man.
Like the way the bar is set up there. You can kind of, you know, you get your rotations around.
Right.
Weather's nice. You can get out on the porch.
So were you
got a little view of the downtown from up there
when
too.
Chapel Hill beats Duke, are you up at topo or are you rushing Franklin?
Rushing Franklin. Yeah. Definitely not at topo then. I'm talking just from like Thursday night spot was topo.
I gotcha. What was Friday night?
Friday night.
He's not
would be a good place to start out on Friday or Sunday.
Favorites.
Sunday spot.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it over
there.
It's
kind of weird talking about your spots for each day.
Dude, it was like we'd have them every day, man.
Yeah. I don't have those anymore.
It's all right. We got to get back up there together sometime, man. Maybe
Duke
UNC and then we'll go out and fish out on the coast in OBX or something.
Yeah,
man.
There's some good fishing to be had in Chapel Hill too. Yeah, I did a lot of bass fishing at University Lake there, and
oh yeah,
it was rumored to have more 5-pound bass than any other lake in North Carolina, like per density.
Dude, so, it's got
pretty
I've
special
fished that
place.
Lake.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of big bass in there, man.
Oh yeah,
it's a good time. It's cool because no one really gets to go out there except on the weekends. So it's like, as students, I believe we got access to it during the week, which was pretty sick.
Yeah, yeah. I fish there once or twice a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, I love it, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time here at the show, man. I don't want to take any more time. You got a lot of people coming by, and you guys are busy and love the product. Next boat I get, got to have a Sea Keeper on it, man.
Yeah, let us know. We'll make sure it happens. Yeah,
yes,
thanks
sir.
For having me. It's always fun to chat fishing. Obviously it's a big passion and kind of what brought me into Sea Keeper, but Sea Keeper's fun to talk about as well.
Yeah.
And talk about how we relate to the sport fishing experience too.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right, guys, you guys got to check out Sea Keeper. If you're here at the show, come check them out. You guys got to get their stuff. It changes your life on the water, guys. See you later.
Thanks for joining us on CCO's The Science of Fishing. We hope that this episode was helpful and you learned something for the next time you're wetting a line. Before we cast off, a special thanks to our sponsors, Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. Stay hooked by following us on social media at Science of Fishing and hitting the subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd enjoy this, don't hesitate to share. Until we meet again, catch 'em up.